right here on KBOO, your community radio station.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 34th Annual Real Music Film Series taking place January 13th through February 5th at the Northwest Film Center. New works and classics are featured this year, including The Jazz Loft According to W. Eugene Smith, Mose Allison, Ever Since I Stole the Blues, How Sweet the Sound, The Blind Boys of Alabama, the Les Blank film about Leon Russell called A Poem is a Naked Person, and many, many more. Again, that's the 34th Annual Real Music Film Series taking place January 13th through February 5th. All screenings take place in the Witzel Auditorium in the Portland Art Museum, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, massive protests broke out in airports and in streets across the country this weekend after an executive order signed by President Donald Trump banning refugees and legal permanent residents from seven majority Muslim countries took effect.
Seattle is preparing to open two safe injection sites, the first of their kind in the U.S.
And we hear from former Portland Mayor Sam Adams about climate change and environmental activism.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 30th, 2017. I'm Doug McVeigh.
And I'm Charity Marchant. Massive protests broke out in airports and in streets across the country this weekend after an executive order signed by President Donald Trump banning refugees and legal permanent residents from seven majority Muslim countries took effect. Homeland Security officials detained people at airports who were lawfully in transit when the order took effect. Four federal judges have since ruled to block the order, but in some instances, federal officials are defying the court orders, and the Department of Homeland Security posted a notice on its website saying that the department will continue to enforce Trump's executive action. When the news of the detentions broke Saturday, hundreds of attorneys and thousands of protesters spontaneously descended on airports across the country, demanding the release of detained travelers, including families and children. Even more people gathered in the streets Sunday to call on the president to rescind the order. Alice Olstein attended Sunday's rally outside the White House and brings us this report.
No fear! Refugees are welcome here! No hate! No fear! Refugees are welcome here, no hate, no fear.
Thousands of people packed the square in front of the White House Sunday afternoon to protest President Donald Trump's executive order that many are calling a Muslim ban. Attorney Ali Ranama with the Iranian American Bar Association was one of more than 100 lawyers who descended on Dulles Airport over the weekend when news broke that U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officials were denying entry to people from Syria and six other nations. Through a combination of public pressure and a federal court order, he was able to secure the release of several green card holders.
Yesterday, power of people overshadowed people of power. We, the people, showed up. We organized. We assembled. We filled our airports to support our brothers and sisters who were shamefully denied entry. We chose love. We rejected hate.
Yet while federal judges imposed a national stay on Trump's executive order and demanded all airports release improperly detained individuals, Dulles and a few other airports are refusing to comply and in some cases blocking access to lawyers. Ranama says he will seek a new court order to hold them in contempt and pursue further legal actions against the White House.
Mr. Trump, you're violating the Constitution of these United States. Mr. Trump. If you're not willing to hear us here on the street, be sure the Iranian American Bar Association will definitely see you in court.
As protests at airports continue in multiple cities across the country, Democratic lawmakers say they will introduce bills to fully repeal what they call an un-American ban on refugees from the Middle East. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
Over the weekend, several hundred people gathered at the Portland International Airport to protest President Trump's executive order banning immigration from the seven Muslim countries. On Sunday, the protesters were joined by several elected officials, including U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici, and Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. When the new Portland mayor attempted to speak to the crowd, the protesters shouted him down, angry at the way he had broken up anti-Trump demonstrations the previous week in downtown Portland. The immigration ban implementation is uncertain, as four federal judges have already issued temporary rulings blocking aspects of the order, and 15 state attorney generals, as of Monday morning, had declared the ban to be unconstitutional and unenforceable. KBOO News reporter Sasha Siekman spoke on Saturday with two of the protesters at the airport.
I was just wondering, what brings you guys here today?
I think we're living in an unprecedented kind of moment in history, and we sit in history class as a kid growing up, and you read about these moments, and you're like, what would I do if I was there? And I feel like this is our moment.
Could you describe the scene a little bit for us? What's going on here right now?
So it looks like there's maybe about 100, 150 people, and we're just kind of doing laps around the arrival area in the airport, chanting, got a couple chants going, and a lot of people with signs protesting the Trump's executive order banning people from Muslim countries and protesting a lot of his actions about the wall.
What about you? Where are you from?
I'm from Chile.
From Chile? So are you personally affected?
I think my community is affected. I think the whole country is affected, and I think the whole world is affected.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, I share what he said. It's not so unprecedented, but it's in our times, this is really because one, the rhetorical is totally false. Like these people, there's a war. There's a crisis going on in the Middle East and other countries across the world, and the people trying to flee their countries are victims. It's a crime against our humanity, whether it's a legal crime, whether this like concept of crime against humanity is backed up officially on some paper and by some court and by some entity. I feel like at a human level, at a you, me, you're interviewing me, I'm listening to you, you listen to me, it's a crime to forbid you a safe place in this earth when you have no other place. So I'm here in solidarity, but I'm here to express solidarity with those who have lost everything, who in desperation have had to move to a country where they are discriminated against, where they don't have that much financial opportunities, and where they have to learn a new language. I'm here because me being here also creates a bigger impact in all the other issues and in all the other communities and all the other things that collectively we are fighting against Trump, but at the same time, it's not just Trump, it's a culture that Trump has risen up, and it's a backbone of our country, all these xenophobia, because the only thing, nobody woke up and decided to do this.
Yeah.
It's been on the making. Somebody woke up and decided to run for president, maybe, and then he tapped, everyone knows this, he tapped the potential, he tapped the voices and the stories and the repression and the anger,
yes.
The historical racist.
Was cut out by us. He was the perfect figure to walk through this cutout that we made for him. I mean, Trump has always been, he's been the same type of person his whole public life. He's just been a grifter, an opportunist, a con artist, and he picked the perfect moment in our nation's history to slide through all the little openings that have been open for him. That our institutional decay has allowed him to get to where he's at. So it's a systemic problem. He's exactly right. It's not just Trump. It's the foundation and the fibers of our community and our nation that need to be rebuilt from the ground up. So
do you think we're vulnerable right now for that?
Do we're vulnerable?
The fabric is tearing down.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways we are. I think we've been ignoring a lot of these problems that have been festering. A lot of this economic disparity and the class disparity and the racial and the ongoing racism that this country has never dealt with, it's all coming back up again. And until we cauterize that at its root, until we address it at its root, there's going to be more Trumps. There's going to be more of this conflict. So
It has to be a bigger fight. It has to be a systemic fight.
The slogans that we hear as a country won't change until we as people change individually and have the ability to disagree and agree and yet hold each other accountable to basic standards. And that is something that is not happening in this country, because the most extreme views have been legitimized. Being racist is kind of okay. Like when Obama got elected, I feel like a lot of people of color, especially for African Americans, could say to their kids, one day you could be the president. Something else I was impressing Evan. So that was a huge shift in generations of oppression. Now, people can say, oh, you're a racist, mom. You're a racist. Oh, no issue, you could still be the president.
Yeah.
So it's been totally legitimized.
Yeah.
So until we do more of this, until people feel more uncomfortable until they crack and they say something, and they don't spend their whole lives like, then we're not gonna change.
Right, it's got to be in your face. You got to confront people where they're at, and hopefully you can do that in a way that's constructive. But I think there's a lot of forces in this country that that you simply have to quash. And the only way to do that is to build a movement that's bigger than the racism and the dark forces that are currently in power. And so. Yeah, and to the extent that you can have a dialogue with somebody and maybe change their mind or like have a constructive conversation, I'm all about that. But it has to be beyond that. You have to build something on the left, if you want to call it that, or you have to build something that is a real vision. It can't just be anti something. We have to put forward something that is a real alternative that people can see. And I don't think that our politics at a national level right now are quite there. And so I hope that these kinds of things will build a bigger conversation on that side of the spectrum that can present an alternative. My name is Luke, I'm 29 and I live here in Portland. I'm from Colorado originally.
My name is Alfredo Higueras, I'm 24 and I am from Chile, but my mom's United States and my dad's from Bolivia. And I like saying my story as an immigrant because when I say it, it makes justice to all the other immigrants.
Reporting for KBOO Portland, I'm Sasha Siegman at Portland International Airport.
An executive order signed on Friday afternoon indefinitely barring Syrian refugees from the United States and slapping a 90-day ban on entry for citizens of Iraq, Syria, Iran, Somalia, Libya, Sudan, Yemen, including green card holders, prompted protests and confusion at airports across the country. Shannon Young has more.
Hundreds of protesters swarmed the Los Angeles LAX airport over the weekend in a scene that replicated itself at a handful of other international airports across the United States. They arrived on short notice to vocally oppose an executive order that indefinitely slammed the nation's doors shut to Syrian refugees and banned citizens of 7 countries from entering the U.S. for 90 days. All 7 of the countries are Muslim majority, and the restrictions apply to U.S. permanent residents, also known as green card holders. The executive order took immediate effect, and travelers from countries on the list who were literally mid-flight at the time were detained at airports upon arrival. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer defended the policy in Monday's briefing.
We had 109 people that were temporarily detained. They're all in. But they were temporarily detained to make sure that the safety of the other 324 million Americans was put first. I don't see how that's a big problem.
The order prompted criticism from members of the diplomatic corps who voiced their opposition through the State Department's internal complaint mechanism, some of which was leaked to the press. When asked about it in the Monday White House briefing, Spicer suggested the concerns were exaggerated and made by Foreign Service officers who should consider another career.
Obviously, we're aware of it. But I think that any government official or anyone who doesn't understand the president's goal in this and what this actually was. Again, I think this has been blown way out of proportion and exaggerated. Again, you talk about in a 24-hour period, 325,000 people from other countries flew in through our airports, and we're talking about 109 people. From 7 countries that the Obama administration identified, and these career bureaucrats have a problem with it, I think that they should either get with the program or they can go.
Meanwhile, the detentions continue as people from countries on the list arrive on flights, some of them green card holders who have already gone through the years-long process to obtain permanent residency. Immigration lawyers say some green card holders are being pressured to forfeit their residency papers. At Saturday's protest at LAX, Andrew Cohen, spokesperson for Unite Here Local 11, told FSRN that the union reacted quickly because of its large membership of immigrants and due to past experiences with organizing workers at Trump-owned hotels.
When this attack comes down, this affects us, it affects all the working class, and like these are our members, you know? So this attack on Muslim workers, it's the same as the attack on immigrant workers. It's a sign of things to come, and so it's basically on us to either organize or let them, you know, come and destroy us. But I think that it's a call to action for every single person in the working class right now.
The executive order will impact large immigrant communities in cities like Los Angeles, which is home to what is estimated to be the world's largest concentration of Iranians in diaspora. With Larry Buell, I'm Shannon Young for FSRN.
In Portland over the weekend, there were protests at the airport against the recent xenophobic executive orders banning certain immigrants and refugees. Meanwhile, there were reports of an increased presence of ICE activity in and around the Multnomah County Courthouse. County officials released a statement saying that, quote, "Anything that increases the fear of people accessing our courts is of grave concern. Courthouses need to be safe locations for people to access justice, whether to contest an eviction, seek a restraining order from abuse, or attend a custody hearing. Now, they may be too afraid to show up," end quote. As immigration tensions rise nationally, KBOO reporter Stacy Holtman spoke to Marco Mejia, an immigrant rights organizer in Portland, to get the lowdown on what is going on with immigration issues in Portland.
Welcome, Marco, to KBOO.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I have been for the last 22 years working on immigrant rights through a number of different groups and organizations. We all know, and not just know, but we are feeling it. It's a very difficult time. But before we continue, I want to tell people that people need to understand that this is not only about Trump in a response to Trump. This is really a response to a system that has been working, that has been there for a very long time, that we need to continue resisting and that we need to change. What is going on has already been going on in Poland and this country. What's happening is that it's getting a little more radical in the way it has this system and how these ideas of xenophobia and white supremacism are advancing. So what is going on right now is that there has been a lot of response from a lot of our communities. There has been a lot of community gatherings, community forums, popular assemblies, et cetera, where our groups and organizations and our communities are getting to understand better what's going on in order to give a response. This is going to be, in the long term, what's happening. So our organizing is going to be also in that term. So you see, we have a lot of people that came out to the airport to make a statement, you know, saying that we are welcoming immigrants and refugees, that we welcome people from all religions. We are welcoming everyone here in this country and here in Poland especially. Finally, and some elected officials and some politicians came forward to openly denounce what's going on. I think that especially what I'm thinking about is the raids that have been happening at the county courthouse. You know, one thing is to come out to marches and demonstrations in that way, which is very important, but the other one is being proactive and really act and do something about it. I will recommend people that are listening to the radio station to email tircpbx@gmail.com. That's the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition. And we are organizing working groups that are going to be working and dealing with different issues.
Thank you, Marco.
Thank you very much.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, the nation's largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization, today filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of more than 20 named and John Doe individuals challenging the constitutionality of President Trump's recent Muslim ban executive order. The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. Kerr held a news conference earlier today to announce the suit. Here are Alina F. Masri, National Litigation Director and Acting Civil Rights Director at Kerr, and Kadir Abbas, Staff Attorney for Kerr, with more details about the suit.
This afternoon, we filed a federal lawsuit in the Eastern District of Virginia challenging what has been referred to as the Muslim ban, which was signed by President Trump this past Friday. This lawsuit is a broad constitutional challenge, and it was filed on behalf of over 20 Muslims, consisting of both Americans and non-citizens, that are lawfully residing in the United States. Let me be clear. This is not a Muslim ban, simply. It is a Muslim exclusion order. It is not only designed to strategically target Muslims to deny them entry into the United States, regardless of whether they're U.S. citizens, regardless of whether they're green card holders, or if they have lawful status. The untold story behind the Muslim exclusion ban order is that it initiates the expulsion of Muslims that are lawfully residing in the United States. By creating a religious persecution exception to only non-Muslims from the designated countries to enter, Muslims fleeing persecution in their home countries will be forced to return, despite the fact that they may be likely to be tortured, persecuted, or even executed. Fathers and mothers are being separated from their children. Husbands are being separated from their wives. Workers from continuing their employment and students from continuing their education, simply because they're Muslim. All of us as Americans, will be denied access to our physicians, to our nurses, to our educators, to our engineers and professionals across civil society because they are Muslim. The Muslim exclusion order stands contrary to our values as American citizens and contrary to our U.S. Constitution. The Muslim exclusion order is a fulfillment of a campaign promise made by Trump prior to being elected, and it's also a message that he intends to fulfill his promises that he made during his campaign that are rooted in bigotry and in hate. We have and we will continue to stand together as Americans against injustice. When one group is targeted, we are all targeted. Thousands of Americans of all races and all creeds have demonstrated over this weekend in opposition to this Muslim exclusion order. That is beautiful, and that is what America is about.
President Trump's actions are not simply words on paper. They're the grandest monument to anti-Muslim sentiment that America has ever known. And it's fortunate for all of us in the Muslim community here, in the Muslim community across the globe, as well as the millions of Americans that condemn what Donald Trump has done, that the Constitution forbids what Donald Trump has done. We're not talking about the 15th Amendment or an amendment later in the teens or the 20s. We're talking about the very first amendment of the Constitution, which prohibits a government from favoring one faith over another. And there are few times in American history where the government has officially disfavored a whole religious faith. And this is one of those instances. And the fact that this is so unprecedented is an indication that the traditions of America are on the side of Muslims, they're on the side of those who defend civil liberties, and they're against those that want to do harm to the many Muslims in this country and abroad. And make no mistake about it, the effect of this ban, while obviously affecting the green card holders, the students on visas in this country, and others on temporary status here, this executive order affects all Americans. Every Muslim is feeling the stigma that this executive order imposes upon them. Every American Muslim, my friends, my family, our friends, our family, are feeling the the fear and the bigotry that this executive order perpetuates. And we are seeing that thus far, five judges have had the opportunity to weigh in on the constitutionality of this executive order, and we're batting five for five. Five judges have found constitutional problems with this executive order, and so we hope to put an end to it once and for all.
You just heard Lena F. Masri, National Litigation Director and Acting Civil Rights Director at CARE, and Ghadir Abbas, Staff Attorney for CARE, discussing CARE's lawsuit against the Muslim ban federal executive order.
Due to Friday's Muslim ban executive order, Washington State is the first state to sue President Trump, the Department of Homeland Security, and other Trump officials. Washington State's Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, is asking the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington to declare key provisions of the immigration executive order illegal and unconstitutional. Ferguson has also filed a temporary restraining order to block the enforcement of the executive order. The suit argues that Trump's order violates the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, the Fifth Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, the 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act, and the right to due process. Major employers in Washington, including Amazon and Expedia, also filed declarations alongside the complaint, setting out how the immigration order impacts their operations and employees.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Labor Radio at 6, Of the Working Class, By the Working Class, and For the Working Class. Then at 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline, presenting a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and challenging the status quo. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, a 30% chance of rain, cloudy, with a low around 35. Tomorrow, 30% chance of rain, mainly before 10 a.m., cloudy with a high near 44. Today in history, in 1948, Indian political and spiritual leader Mahatma Gandhi was assassinated by a Hindu extremist. In 1972, a civil rights demonstration through the streets of Derry in Northern Ireland ended with the shooting dead of 13 civilians by the British Army, an incident known as Bloody Sunday. The quote of the day is from Arundhati Roy, who said, "Our strategy should be not only to confront empire, but to lay siege to it, to deprive it of oxygen, to shame it, to mock it, with our art, our music, our literature, our stubbornness, our joy, our brilliance, our sheer relentlessness, and our ability to tell our own stories, stories that are different from the ones we're being brainwashed to believe."
And now, we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. Protests against Trump's immigration ban on Muslims erupted at airports around the nation over the weekend. U.S. District Judge Anne M. Donnelly granted a temporary stay on deportations against people from the seven predominantly Muslim countries targeted by Trump's order. The judge held that there's strong likelihood of success in a legal effort to establish that the order violates their rights to due process and equal protection guaranteed by the United States Constitution. The National Employment Law Project's Catherine Ruckelshaus says under CEO Andy Puzder, CKE restaurants have a culture of not complying with labor laws. If Puzder didn't make sure labor law was followed when he was CEO, how can workers expect Puzder to enforce labor law if he becomes labor secretary?
The culture at the company is not one of complying with basic laws, and that's the problem. Companies can make a choice about who they operate with, who they contract with in a franchise agreement, and they can certainly set standards and issue directives like Subway has with its franchisees to make sure that baseline minimum wage and health and safety and discrimination laws are followed.
Ruckelshaus says CKE restaurants are also not respecting the legal right of workers to organize unions, and the company is also threatening workers who speak to the press about it.
CKE restaurants are also suppressing worker organizing. Carl's Jr. restaurants have told their employees not to speak to the press, saying the press is not our friend, and threatening discipline to the workers if they do. That missive came from CKE down to the restaurants.
After decades of political attacks against labor unions, the percentage of U.S. workers in unions in 2016 dropped to 10.7% of the workforce. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that all told, 16.3 million American workers are covered by union collective bargaining contracts. And yet in polls going back decades, Gallup consistently finds strong public approval for unions. The AFL-CIO says there are millions of working people who want and need a union but who are being prevented from forming one by their employer. The AFL-CIO says that instead of penalizing bad actors, our outdated labor laws have made union avoidance nothing more than the cost of doing business. Union members continue to make about $200 more per week on average than non-union workers.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 725,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
Brought to you by unionjobs.com, posting jobs for unions, socially allied, and community organizations since 1997.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Days before leaving office, the outgoing Obama administration Secretary of Commerce, Penny Pritzker, declared commercial fishery failures at 9 separate West Coast salmon and crab populations. The decision allows communities affected by the crashing fish populations to seek federal disaster relief. The fishery failure areas include Gulf of Alaska pink salmon, California Dungeness crab, Grays Harbor coho salmon, and the Klamath River and Puget Sound salmon fisheries, among others. The declaration by the Commerce Secretary stated that the fisheries experienced sudden and unexpected large decreases in fish stock biomass or loss of access due to unusual ocean and climate conditions.
The public comment period regarding the air pollution permits for the proposed Klamath methanol refinery will be coming to a close next Monday, February 6th. If built, the proposed facility would be by far the largest methanol production facility in the world, producing up to 10,000 metric tons of methanol per day. The refinery would use 5 million gallons of water per day from local aquifers and consume more natural gas per day than all the gas-fired electrical generating plants currently in operation in the state of Washington. Prior to shipment, up to 72 million gallons of methanol would be stored on-site in an area at risk of what could be a cataclysmic earthquake sometime within the next 50 years. The methanol would then be shipped to China, where it would be used for the manufacture of plastic. For more information, or to submit a comment, you can go to the Columbia Riverkeeper website. The URL is columbiariverkeeper.org. Concerned citizens are urged to share their written comments before the Monday deadline.
Former Portland Mayor Sam Adams works in Washington, D.C. with the World Resources Institute, where he is the United States Director, focusing largely on climate change. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with him this afternoon about how the Trump presidency could impact efforts to slow global warming.
Do you think the United States is going to back out of the Paris Accords? And what would happen if we did?
That's a great question. Every indication is that this administration will do one of two things, or maybe two things at the same time. Either we'll back out. There has been talk of also sort of defunding and backing out other United Nations programs on the environment, even beyond carbon pollution. The other option, or the other scenario, is we stay in Paris, but the domestic policies. You know, there's the elimination of the Clean Power Plan. There's backing off a whole host of other executive orders and regulations that that Congress can do, and that we just slow walk, or we do no walk towards fulfilling the goals of the Paris Summit. I think it's absolutely critically important that the United States stay in the Paris Agreement. If we pull out, there'll be collateral damage on a whole host of other issues. The United States has been a beacon for progress, imperfectly so numerous times, and still no question, but it has been a beacon for progress. And pulling out of the Paris Agreement, it'll be devastating to our standing and our credibility around the world.
Okay, this is my last question, Sam. A lot of people in my networks are losing hope right now. What should we be paying attention to?
Well, you know, the most right now, when you pull on the issues of climate, it shows up there's like 17 concerns that people are ranked about. And climate action has been down near the bottom or at the bottom in terms of the lowest top concern that Americans have. It's now moving up. Even a majority of Republicans, you know, want us to stay in the Paris Agreement. We were just mentioning they want to see action taken on reducing our carbon emissions. So there's broad agreement that this is, you know, an important issue. And to make it more visible, to make it more immediate, I really encourage people to, you know, stay engaged with critical decisions that are made at the city and the county and the state and at the federal level. Don't assume that our congressional delegation knows that a particular issue is important. Don't assume that, you know, there's adequate support at city council to move forward on an issue that would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Stay alert, stay active.
All right, Sam Adams, former mayor of Portland, now with the World Resources Institute. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Absolute pleasure. Big fan of KBOO. Thanks for all that you do.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Seattle is preparing to open two safe injection sites, the first of their kind in the U.S., where intravenous drug users will be able to inject in the presence of public health workers. On January 19th, King County's Board of Health voted unanimously to endorse the sites, following up on recommendations made by a task force formed last year in response to a resurgence in opiate deaths in the region. In 2014, the Seattle area experienced its largest number of heroin overdose deaths in 20 years, 156. Advocates cite the success of syringe exchange programs and say that safe injection sites will prevent overdoses and keep used needles off the city's streets, among other benefits. Similar sites already exist in Canada, Australia, Germany, Switzerland, Spain, and several other European nations. Other states in the U.S. are said to be considering them as well, including California, Vermont, Maryland, and New York. San Francisco's Mayor Ed Lee, earlier this month, relaxed his earlier opposition to the idea of safe injection sites, saying he is now open to the idea.
Continuing his flurry of executive orders, President Trump today signed an order authorizing zero monies to enforce any new regulations that federal agencies implement. Known as the one and two out order, the action requires that federal agencies revoke two regulations for any new regulation they request. The newly signed executive order will be directed by the Office of Management and Budget. The order does not affect independent agencies, including the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, nor does it affect rules mandated by statutes.
On Saturday, the president signed an executive order placing his chief White House strategist, Steve Bannon, on the National Security Council. Bannon is a right-wing media figure who formerly ran the website Breitbart News. At the same time, in an unprecedented move, the president downgraded the roles of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the director of National Intelligence. Instead of attending daily briefings, those two officials will be present only when issues under their direct responsibility are being discussed.
Six people were shot and killed in a mosque in Quebec City on Sunday in what Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has called a terrorist attack. The incident occurred during evening prayers at the Islamic Cultural Center of Quebec. In addition to the six who were killed, at least 18 others were injured, five of whom are still in hospital. Today, authorities charged Alexandre Bissonnette with six counts of premeditated murder in the case. Bissonnette is a student at Laval University, where he's reportedly known as a supporter of the French right-wing anti-immigrant politician Marine Le Pen. Police say that Bissonnette acted alone.
Despite proclaiming during the presidential campaign his intent to end the Syrian civil war, last week, President Trump stated he was in favor of having the U.S. military establish safe zones in the war-torn country, a move that could easily destabilize Syria even further. The Syrian government has responded that the creation of safe zones would be a violation of Syria's sovereignty. Adding to the uncertainty surrounding America's policy towards Syria were reports over the weekend that the Syrian president, Bashar Assad, had suffered a major stroke. While the Syrian government has repeatedly denied the rumors, President Assad has not been seen in public since last Thursday.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Lisa Loving, Don Zer, Tony Letigre, Kyle Carezzi, Sasha Sekman, and Jacob Randall. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News, Workers Independent News, and Oregon News Service. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Charity Marchand. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Charity Marchand.
And I'm Doug McVeigh. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show takes your calls. At 9, Alternative Radio presents one of the most important and rarely heard speeches from Martin Luther King Jr., recorded at the Riverside Church in New York 1 year before his assassination. It's Beyond Vietnam. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11, on stage and studio, DeMay Roberts presents Furious Flowers, the most celebrated black poets in America pay homage to the life and work of former poet laureate and Pulitzer Prize winner Rita Dove. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus, interviews with curators, critics, and artists. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
Former Portland
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Former Portland Mayor Sam Adams now resides in Washington, D.C., where he works with the World Resources Institute, an organization focused on the environment, climate change, and natural resources. Earlier today, KBOO reporter Lisa Loving spoke to Adams about climate change and his work at the WRI.
Sam, this is not a nonprofit activist group. What does the WRI do, and what is your job there?
Yeah, WRI is an independent think tank and do tank. We have offices in eight countries or continents around the world, and we work on study and convene experts around the
the intersection of the environment, economic development, and human well-being. And my job is as the director for the work of WRI in the United States. So I'm the U.S. director.
You've been there. Have you been there for, are you going on your second year now?
I'm on, let's see, in March, it'll be 2 years here in Washington, D.C., yes.
All right. So, Sam, the past 72 hours have brought a lot of shocking events relating to President Donald Trump. And when I scanned the homepage of the World Resources Institute website, over the past couple days, I've noticed it seems like there's quite a few stories that no one can pay attention to because of all the confusion and chaos that the president is bringing. I wanted to ask you, for people concerned with climate change, is environmental democracy in jeopardy right now, as WRI says? Talk about it.
Yeah, we're, WRI, we're a fact-based think tank, and based on the facts, you know, we're worried. The nominees for the Trump cabinet are deeply embedded and steeped in fossil fuel industries, have stood up and offered policies to continue to move forward a fossil fuel dependent nation. So we're very concerned. I mean, on top of that, you know, in the last 72 hours, we've seen the administration, you know, not just, retool the websites, but also to take basic information and data off websites that is not normal during a presidential transition. There's been some of that put back on because of our outcry and the outcry of a lot of other people. But, yeah, I mean, there are, and we now are seeing the executive orders on a variety of environmental issues and other issues. So, yeah, this is a real deep concern.
It does feel unprecedented to me as well. And at the KBOO Evening News Department, we have for the past month covered the efforts of climate change scientists in other parts of the world and in the United States to try to preserve their data, trying to back up data that they know the Environmental Protection Agency had regarding climate change. I actually think that's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented in a